serenity prayer.
God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Okay, my partner Kent.
Good morning, my name is Kent Coleman, I'm an alcoholic. Want to thank this committee, want to thank all of you for your kindness and your hospitality during our visit. I've been here before, as some of you know, and this is a pocket of enthusiasm of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's been an honor and a privilege, and to be here with my friend Joe, who I have known for years, and we've had a lot of fun, and you know, the best is yet to come, as always, right? And that's kind of where we're going to go this morning. You know, when we talked a few months ago about what we were going to do insofar as topics, when we got to the last one, right, it's kind of like what things look like now. Not only personally, but some of the things Butch really kind of like segued us last night into kind of what I'm going to talk about a little bit this morning, and what not just what my life looks like now, right? Because everybody in here has a life, and hopefully, you know, we're seeking guidance and direction from God, and your life looks like, hopefully, you know, you're moving in the direction that God would have you to go, right? I started thinking about Alcoholics Anonymous, right, and where we are, and where we came from, right, and where we're going today. We have a lot of challenges today, but I think Alcoholics Anonymous has always had a lot of challenges. You ever notice how, because there's such a proliferation now of social media, and just we're just bombarded with stuff all the time, and it makes things seem a whole lot worse than really what they really are, right? You know, my first pastor always used to look at me and laugh and say, you know, God is still in charge. Right? And sometimes I think we forget that. We ingest so much negativity. Right? Man, I'm enjoying life today. Right? I ain't sitting around sighing over the sad state of nothing. Right? I have a purpose in life today. And in seeking to use the principles that I've been taught in here, which are the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and the 12 concepts, I was brought up in Alcoholics Anonymous in the three legacies, not just one. They used to tell us at home, if you got a stool and ain't got but one or two legs on it, you're going to have a hard time sitting down, right? And so that's the way I was brought up in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? So the way I was taught, right, I would go to my sponsor with a whole bunch of problems. Right? When I was new, I used to call Bill every day when I would leave Ford. I'd go home and I would call him up. And I would read him my list of grievances for the day. And trust me, I had them every day, right? These people ain't treated me right, and you would not believe how they spoke to me this morning, and you really wouldn't believe what she said to me this afternoon, right? All right? And Bill would listen to my list of grievances, and then he'd say, who are you helping? And I'd say, well, I don't think you were listening. Because this is some bad stuff here. Let me run this down for you one more time. Because this is serious, but right? And I would read it again, and he would say, who are you helping? Click. And I learned my first week that he became my sponsor, when he hangs the phone up, you do not call him back. All right? Because he was done talking to you. And he now wants you to go. So you know, today, like, all right, what are we doing? Are we having fun? Are we following our steps, our traditions, our concepts to the best of our ability? Are we passing that on? You know, and so like, what does my life look like in this thing now? Like, what am I doing? I want to read something. That's on. I love the chapter, A Vision for You. Because I'm going to tell you something. We don't dwell on the past, but we dang on sure need to learn from it. Right? And they left us this chapter, and this chapter is timeless. This chapter is not about 1935. Right? I do a book study, and it's a workshop. I don't stop at working with others and go back to the beginning. To wives, to family afterward, to employer. Right? A vision. For you, right? Because see, I want this whole thing. I want to know what this whole thing is going to look like in my life. I want to read something from A Vision for You real quick. Our hope is that when this chip of a book is launched on the world tide of alcoholism, defeated drinkers will seize upon it to follow its suggestions. They will seize upon it to follow its suggestions. Like when I go to meetings, am I hearing that? Are we talking about the book, and are we talking about following the suggestions in the book, or are we talking about somebody's washing machine that broke down and how tragic this is in their life? And we spend a whole hour talking about this. Are we doing this? Where's our focus? Where is our focus, and what is our purpose? Where's our focus? What I was taught is that our group is responsible for maintaining the focus during the meeting, and that we don't turn the meeting over to the people who walk through the door. And we talk to people about sponsorship, and we talk to people about things that we'll sit down and talk with you about after the meeting. Any meeting that our group has, we look at it from one standpoint only. If somebody walked in here and this is the first meeting that they ever came to, what are they going to walk out of here with? How to fix a washing machine? How to fix a washing machine? Let me read a little more. Many, we are sure, will rise to their feet and march on. They will approach still other sick ones, and fellowships of Alcoholics Anonymous may spring up in each city, hamlet, havens for those who must find a way out. In the chapter, Working with Others, you gathered an idea of how we approach and aid others to health. Suppose now that through you, several families, not several alcoholics, several families. How much emphasis in this book? We've been graced to have wonderful Al-Anons here with us this weekend sharing in this event. How much of the family is talked about now in the meetings in your home group? Or will we just sit around and talk about us? Just let's talk about ourselves. The family is woven through the fabric of this book. Have adopted this way of life. You will want to know more of how to proceed from that point. Perhaps the best way of treating you to a glimpse of your future will be to describe the growth of the fellowship among us. So what they did from this point on in the book, right, is tell us how Alcoholics Anonymous began, what they did, and how it grew exponentially for a long, long time. Bill Wilson used to say the test tube for Alcoholics Anonymous was Cleveland. He had a few people in New York, he had a few people in Akron, and it wasn't a whole bunch. And then all of a sudden, through some publicity and some newspaper articles, Alcoholics Anonymous exploded in the city of Cleveland. And Bill Wilson said, we had no idea whether or not this could have sustainable, healthy growth in large numbers quickly. If you take a look in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age, they make a statement about that period in our history. And what it says is the early Cleveland members found three things out, right? Because obviously they were very, very successful. Number one, the value of sponsorship, personal sponsorship. Number two, the presentation of the program as outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Do you know they used to rent old movie theaters and take 50 people in there at a time? There was 12 men in Cleveland in AA at that time, 12. And they got hundreds of letters come pouring in when these articles came out in the Cleveland Plain Dealer. They used to rent old movie theaters and take 50 people in there at a time. And they took the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and they walked them through this process. And then when the next wave of people came, they took those people and hooked them up with those people and they started working with them. This is how Alcoholics Anonymous grew. So honestly, we know from our history what's effective. It's not like we got to figure anything out. I'm not a guy that's going to sit up here and say, like, I know how big AA is now and I know how good. I don't know. I ain't went around counting everybody. Right? I know General Service puts some stuff out, and they say, you know, it don't look like we're really growing at the kind of rate like we used to, and then there's a whole bunch of blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I don't really care. Here's what I'm responsible for. What's going on at my home group? What's going on at my home group? That's what I'm responsible for. Right? If somebody is sitting outside the Venice group of Alcoholics Anonymous and a newcomer goes in and he walks out an hour later and you call him over and you say to them, what did you find in there? What are they going to say? They asked if there were any new people and everybody clapped and then they got up and went home. Butch talked on something last night and he said if you come to his home group, there's going to be six people that greet you at the bottom of them steps, and he guaranteed that. Right? And that they're going to talk, they got a newcomer room where they don't just say, get a sponsor. Who knows what a sponsor is? I used to play softball for Cronin's Tavern. They was our sponsor. That's how much I knew about sponsors when I came to AA. I don't know nothing about no sponsor. I don't know nothing about no home group. I knew nothing about nothing. I came in here with no AA information or etiquette at all. And I came in here as I was, frightened, right? And absolutely separated from any and everything in my life. So, when somebody comes to our group, right, are we looking at our history and our experience, right, and simply following it? Because here's what it still works. Alcoholics are still alcoholics. And they're still coming in at the same rate as they were before, right? Now, it looks a little bit different than it did then. Because kind of the doorway to Alcoholics Anonymous back then was an AA member put you in the hospital. You were visited two at a time by several AA members who told you their drunk-a-log, like Butch talked about last night. You got the drunk-a-log to establish identification. At the end of the week, doctor came in, long, lanky fella, lived over in Akron. And he'd ask you if you believe in God, right? And you start stammering around, and he's like, I ask you all that, do you or don't you? Yeah, well, yeah. Well, then let's ask him for some help. How simple this stuff is. And they would say a prayer, and they would ask for some help. This guy's already engaged in the process, and he don't even know it. All right, we got a meeting on Wednesday night. We're going to take you over there. Those guys who came to talk to you, those are the other members of your home group. They're your support group. The guy who put you in the hospital here, that's your sponsor. So when you walked into your first AA meeting, you already have a sponsor. You already have a home group. They gave you a commitment that night, and you have a support group. You had that in place at your first AA meeting, and you wonder why they had a success rate of 50% and was 25% after some trip, and then some more came back later. How long and how difficult is it now for somebody to get those things or even know what those things are? Right? So at our group, you know, we sat down and we started looking at the fact that, you know what, we look to be a little stagnant here. This was about 2 or 3 years ago. We're looking a little stagnant here. Right? So what do we need to do? Right? We got, somebody says, well, these people come in, they have these court papers. And they sit them down here. And somebody said, man, I missed the 12-step call. I remember, I really loved them. Because when I was new, I used to go on 3 or 4 a week. Out in the middle of the night, some farmhouse, shotguns, you know, the whole nine yards. Right? I went on a lot of 12-step calls with my sponsor. We go on a 12-step call, and we'd get there, and Bill would say, go on in there, let's talk to this guy. But I noticed he always shoved me in the door first. We left. We left one day. We went to this motel, and this guy, he had a .45 laying on the table, right? I mean, I was the first one in there. I went straight for that gun, right? And when we left, I said, Bill, how come I always have to go in first when there's a 12-step call? He said, that's in case there's any shooting. Anyway, I thought, gosh, I can't wait to get me a sponsee, right? So the guy goes, we missed the 12-step call. Remember when we used to get them? I said, yeah, we still do. He said, really? I said, it's right here. Here's your 12-step call, people. Here's your 12-step call right here. Everybody don't want this. I'm not responsible for that. What I'm responsible for is carrying this message, not mine, this message to you. You can take it, you can leave it. It is up to you. I'm not in the business of converting people in here. But one thing I can say for sure is if you leave our group and you don't want this, it will not be because it wasn't offered to you. And man, do we have fun with it. So then we started talking. And we said, well, we don't have the old 12-step call no more. Right? Those were fun. Right? We need to have some fun. I said, well, how about we do this? We get these people come in here with these. We see at the top where they got them. Right? Why don't we pay a visit to those people? And let them know that we're available. Right? Do you know how many people out there are desperately, how many organizations, right, court systems, right, treatment, they that are dying for some help. They out there trying to do this thing by themselves, and a lot of them don't have any idea what they're dealing with. And somehow, you know, it's like we at our group, we thought we've become so arrogant, we just sitting back here now waiting on people to come to us. I don't think that's what they did here. Did they? Because if they did, we wouldn't be here. Right? So we started to go places. We went down to the courthouse. We went over to the hospital. We went to the Oriana house. Right? And we said, you know, we have an AE group. Right? And we'd love to help you. Right? How may we help you? Right? How may we be of service to you? Right? Could you bring a meeting in here? Could you come in here and do a newcomers deal for these guys? Right? So I started going in there and doing a newcomers deal on Thursday. Still do it. Right? To help these guys learn where they're going, what's going on, right? So all of a sudden, we're starting to get people sent to us, not like we did in the old days when they called the intergroup office, but we now have the opportunity, right, to engage them before they even get to a meeting. Now they know what a sponsor is. A lot of them, we get them hooked up and start working with them before they even get to a meeting, as soon as they come into the house, right? And we get them going, and we help them understand, this is what you're going to see at a meeting. This is how a meeting is conducted, right? This is what we do. This is how we do what we do, right? This is what our traditions look like, right? We talk to them about singleness of purpose, right? We talk to them about you drink. It's crazy because, you know, like where I live is a huge opiate epidemic, and I think everybody knows that. And people are dropping like flies, right? And it's like, whoa, they don't we know if they belong here. Did you talk to them? Have you talked to them? And I talked to these kids. I said, well, what brought you here? Opiates. Really? I did a lot of dope, right? So we talk about that, right? And then I said, well, did you ever do any drinking? Drinking? Oh, my God, I got four DUIs. I can't drink. Boom! Right? No, I got you, right? I'm going to share this with you because it's my own personal experience. Anybody that comes here will identify with the beast that brought them to the door. That doesn't mean that they don't belong here. How do you expect these people to know this stuff if we don't talk to them? Right? And if they don't, right, have a desire not to drink, okay, we're connected with other 12-step fellowships. We know those people. We have their numbers. Right? We get them where they need to go. We get them where they need to go. And I tell you, our group starts to grow. It starts to thrive. It starts to be a buzz in the room again, right? And we got new guys bringing new guys, and we got guys starting to sponsor guys, right? I use the word formula, if you will. And it's also the way that the book is laid out, because the book would have to be laid out that way because the book is the original sponsor. So how is the book laid out? Three parts. What is the problem, right? So we establish identification, right? Step one, right? Then it tells us what the solution is, right? To get some power, right? Then it gives us a practical program of action to apply to our lives to obtain and maintain access to that power. Right? So that's exactly what the book does. That's exactly what we do. That's exactly what we do. And that's the way that we've structured ourselves as a group. Right? Alcoholics Anonymous, to me, today in our group, is more fun than it ever has been. We don't sit around talking about controversy and all of this. We adhere to tradition. We discuss a tradition every month in the group conscious meeting. As a sponsor, after I take a guy through the steps, and I'm not saying like, here's what they made me do. I had to read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. Then I read Pass It On. And like, I wasn't really crazy about a whole bunch of reading. They didn't put a time limit on it. Then AA Comes of Age. They told me that if you want to be an effective member of this, you know, you need to know where it came from, why it is what it is, and why it looks like what it looks like, why we do what we do. How on earth? We tell the new people, we want you guys to carry this on into the future. How are you going to carry something on into the future that you don't know what it is and you don't know where it came from and you have no idea what it is? That's why we got people now questioning the validity of anonymity. Right? You watching some of the stuff that's going on? Why do we need to be anonymous? I should be able to put it in the newspaper. It would help more people. We settled that in the 40s. But how do we expect these people to know that? Right? So as a sponsor and as a member of a group, like what do I look like now 25 years up in here? We sit around and at where I live at, they wax poetic about these old timers from the 40s. Oh yes, you remember so and so. You remember so and so. Right? He did this, he did that. I see it to a lady 38 years sober a couple weeks ago. I said, yeah, you know, you talk a lot about what she did for you. Do you do that for people now? And that lady looked at me and she got tears in her eyes. God is now. I live in the presence of God now. Now is the only place where God can use me. When they say one day at a time in here, really? Like, that's really the whole thing about what we're talking about is so far as, you know, what does this look like now? What does it look like today? Not what happened 20 years ago. I'm glad they did that for you. But I live in the presence of God today. God can only use me today. God can't use me 2 weeks from now because I ain't 2 weeks from now. And 2 weeks ago is gone, and it ain't coming back. So where am I at with this stuff now? I found so much fun stuff to do. If I didn't have to work. Unfortunately, I got two daughters. Right? I got one that's a junior in college, and she's going to turn 21 today. So we got her birthday dinner at 5 o'clock today. So as soon as this is over, I'm going to have to go to the airport. But right, like, so I got this really cool life today, right? And it's like, I see so many opportunities to help. Every day I walk out of my house, I am surrounded by need. But I got to be awake to see it. I go to work, I am surrounded by people in need. Right? I'm in the grocery store. I get out my car, I see an elderly couple struggling trying to get their stuff in the car. Do I see that? Am I awake in my own life? Or am I walking around wrapped up in me, selfish, self-centered, right, self-concerned, and self-absorbed? And quite frankly, let's get real up in here this morning. Yeah, a lot of the time I am. A lot of the time I'm so full of me, I can't even see you. I see Sheldon sitting over there now, but sometimes I look at Sheldon, I can't see Sheldon because I'm too busy thinking about Kent. So one day at a time, if I'm president, the opportunities. I went back to where I went to college. They had 5 kids die in 1 year, one of the best schools in the country. Very, very expensive place to get an education. It's the kind of family that I had. It's also a haven for this disease. And they had 5 kids go home in caskets in one school year, 22,000 students. And I'm like, man, you know, I got a little extra time on my hands now. You know, I'm divorced, I'm single, I got a lot of time, you know. So I went to them, and I said, may I be of service? And they said, well, when were you here? And I told them, you know, and they said, well, we'll get back to you. So about a week later, I get a call from the Student Health Services, and this doctor says,
There's people here who remember you.
I said, well, that was a long time ago, and there wasn't a whole lot of witnesses. They go, oh, yeah, they were. And so I went down and I met with them. What a great experience this was, right? And they were telling me, because it's in a small college town, you got 22,000 students at the school, and the town only got like 8,000 people, right? So there's always been a lot of animosity between the townies and the students, right? The students come in during the elections and just vote in everything, because you can vote there, right? Then the townspeople really resent it, right? So they wanted to get an AA meeting going down there up on the campus, right? And I thought, man, there'll be great enthusiasm for that here, right? And I went to an AA meeting there. They was like, they on their own. I was, really? Yeah, they didn't want to do it, right? That's okay. I got some guys from Cincinnati to come up and give them a little support. And there's meetings going. They're getting together to do the first sober dormitory. We've been working on that. I played ball down there. They asked me to speak to the football team. This was a lot of fun. The football team, the basketball team, the girls' basketball team, the girls' field hockey team. The Greeks. The Greeks, they made the cover of Time magazine for some of their antics from that school. Real black eye to a very prestigious university. And we closed the door, right? And there's no administration in there. And they looking at me. You know, I still kind of, you know, we don't, a guy like me really never grows up. I kind of still think like I belong there, right? You know what I mean? And they're looking at me like, whose granddad is this, right? Now I'm kind of thinking, you know, I could date these girls, right? My daughter's older than some of these girls, right? So there I am, right? And I start to share, because I know about that life. Because you guys taught me that experience is what we share here. You guys taught me that. I know about the pressure. I know about the expectations. I know about going to a school where everybody that's there was the valedictorian somewhere else. I know what that's like. I know what it's like to go play ball at a place where everybody was all state, not just you. I know what that's like. And I know what it's like to be alone and afraid and away from home. And I know what peer pressure, I know. And I started talking to them, and an amazing thing happened. They started talking to me. And they started talking to me. Right? And so like some really, what does it mean? There's so much stuff. I don't know how long God gonna leave me here, but man, there's so much stuff. There's so much work to be done. There's so many opportunities. I'm gonna say this, and then I'm gonna shut up and let Joe talk. Everything here is experiential. There are things that happen as a result of actions taken in here, in my spirit, that I don't have a vocabulary extensive enough to be able to describe to you. But you know how that stuff is manifested? You know how I say it? Look into my eyes. Look into my eyes. Listen to the conviction in my voice. Look at the smile on my face. That's because you can't, I can't put it into words. I tell my sponsees, you have to go do it. You have to do it. It's not something you get reading a book or listening to somebody else talk about. Recovery is in my feet. It is not in my head. My first sponsor used to tell me, I'm going to train your feet against your head. Right? And so here it is, 25 years later, Bill been dead 5 years, right? I'm sitting at home, it's Monday night, right? And I'm thinking, you know, I just came home from a conference. I went to 11 meetings this weekend. There really is no reason for me to be getting up and going to the meeting tonight. And, right? As I'm thinking all this crazy stuff, I'm walking to the car. Right? I'm walking to the car because he trained my head against my feet. And it is from the doing, right, that the enthusiasm to do more is born. And if you don't do it, you'll never understand what I just said. You'll never get it. You'll never get it. Right? So we do. Right? So today, right, as a person, as a member of a group, as a member of this fellowship, and as a citizen in the community that I live in, I am surrounded by opportunity and by need. I tell my sponsees the day they ask me for help, or the day I offer it to them, because I do that too, don't ever tell me you ain't got nothing to do. That is the one thing that I will go to prison for strangling you if you tell me you ain't got nothing to do. Open up your eyes. How many people will leave a meeting feeling more alone than when they came? Butch talked about it last night. You know, in the book, it talked about when that new prospect came to his first meeting, they made a host of new friends. They left excited about what they could do and how they could carry this to other families. Is that the experience I would have if I came to your group tonight? Would I leave with a host of friends? Would I leave excited about the solution that I found at your meeting? Would I really? My name is Ken Coleman. I'm an alcoholic. God bless. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Ken. God, we've been lucky this weekend. My name's Joe Krogan. I'm an alcoholic.
Joe.
What a great crowd for Sunday morning, too. And the energy here has been incredible. I've heard a lot of these speakers before, but they definitely were inspired this weekend. You could tell. And Kent, also, thank you for doing this with me, and thank you for allowing me to be here with you. And I have some of the best friends in my life in this room, and when I got here, I didn't have any friends. I really didn't. Think about it. When you got here, most of us don't really have any friends left. There was nobody that would accept a collect phone call from me. No, and not because there was a recording in the background that says, "This is a call from an inmate." But they wouldn't. Even my own parents wouldn't accept the collect phone call from me. Because they knew there was bad news on the other end of this phone call. And thank you to Lee and Jimmy out there, who have been the hardest working guys also at this conference this weekend. And they have not stopped moving. And I love those guys. It's hard to follow Ken, but let me tell you, last night we did our countdown, you know, and we do the one for the years, and then we do the one for a year and under a year. And if you're under a year, don't take it personal. You are in a separate group. It's a great experience to get through that first year. And there are a couple people I know I saw one of the people that had the one day yesterday. So now you got two. You got two. Listen, the only thing for the new guys, there is no perfect. What if I could tell you, you can't screw this up? The only way you can screw it up is by not coming back. The only thing I have done 100% correctly in Alcoholics Anonymous for 26 and a half years is stay here. That's the only thing I've done correctly. I have learned through the mistakes in this program, and not through the mistakes, through the pain of the mistakes. And I described it to you. At 5 years, 5 and a half years sober, I got divorced. I lost the best job I ever had. I was broke again financially. And that was what my best effort had done. Sober. And I could not hide behind the alcohol or the drugs anymore and blame them. I was exposed. Selfishness, self-centeredness is the root of our problem. Somebody, and I can't remember who it was talking about driving the car. I used to do that. I would drive a car, and 45 minutes later, I would arrive at where I was, and I don't remember a single thing on the way. I was so absorbed in my own head. Now that doesn't happen very often today, only one or two times a day. But so if you're new, we know, man, you're busy over there. We know you're busy right now. Looking for her, judging. You got a lot going on, man. I've been there. Trying to fix forever today, you know. How do I get this thing worked out? You know, I lived my life in the coming attractions and the instant replay. I was never in today. Never, it was never present. And I couldn't get present. I was one of these guys, I would read a paragraph and read it and go, I don't know what I just read. I haven't got a clue. I don't even know the words. Let me read it again. And I'm telling you, and I know you're out there, 4 or 5 times. And I have to force myself. It was like harnessing wild horses. Pay attention to the words. Undisciplined. Unrestricted. That's why I said to you, there are those types of alcoholics that are normal in every respect. And you are. I believe you got here because the alcohol, you know, you were those guys. You're probably more like those closet drinkers. I was more like a, you know, the relief that came, that sense. I remember, you know, back in the 70s, we did a lot of other substances. And I love what Ken said about the drugs. There's a lot of people come here today, don't even know they're alcoholics. I'm one. I didn't know I was an alcoholic until you exposed it in me and showed me what it was. I'm talking about alcoholism, the disease, not alcohol, the substance. Because you're thinking of the last ride you got, what got you here. What was the last? I was on the bus. No, it may not have been the bus. It may have been the car that dropped you off at the bus stop. You don't know. And until I was in the rooms and I was one of those guys, rebellion, dogs my every step. I was, you know, I'm an addict. That's how I used to introduce myself. And there was only AA meetings where I was in, you know, in Lady Lake, Florida, and middle of nowhere. And then I would listen a little bit more, and I started to hear my story. And I heard a guy with 44 years sober, never took a drug in his life, tell my story. I went, oh my God, that's me. That's me. I have what he has. So, and I don't know, please don't report me to New York, but that's who I am. That's how I got here. Fine, I caught alcoholism from you. I stayed here because you didn't throw me out. I had nowhere to go and pretended to be one of you until I found out I was one of you. So if you're new, welcome. We're, you know, and I know your life is hanging by a thread, man. Our lives are hanging by a thread when we get here. The warrants, the no license, you're in a, maybe in a halfway house or in a sober living conditions, or you're, you know, you've got bills. Everything is your health. Everything is. If you're like me, I was a dropout. I dropped out, and your life was hanging by a thread. There's good news for you. Here's the good news. What seemed at first a thread, a flimsy reed, proved to be the loving hand of God. If you stay here, it may break, but we'll catch you. Trust me, we'll get through it together. I've avoided all those things that were the things that I should have been, that would help me grow in this program. And I love listening to Kent. And Kent was one of these, and he lives in Akron. And I remember I went up there and spoke at a breakfast meeting they have up there, this big breakfast meeting. I took around, saw all the sites. It is an incredible feeling to be up there and be at the mecca of Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of my highlights was to go by the high school where LeBron James went. but it really is a special place. And but I'm Alcoholics Anonymous for dummies. If you're in this room, that's who I am. I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous for dummies. I was the guy that graduated high school. I went to an all-male Catholic high school. There were 140 kids in my high school class. And I remember later on in life, I had to get my high school transcript to apply for a job. And when I got there was a set of twins in my high school. They were mentally challenged, but their dad donated a lot of school to the diocese, and the so they kind of got pushed through high school, and you know, they were, you know, mentally handicapped. And those out of 140 guys, when I got my high school transcript, I graduated 139th. One of those twins was smarter than me. My grade point average, 65 is failing. My grade point average, and I never failed a grade, for 4 years was 66. Do you know how hard it is to do just enough? It's a lot of damn effort to do just enough to get by. You have to set out on a mission. It's like being an atheist. You have to really work to believe that crap. Right? You got to compile some information, you know, and draw and make a stand. And I had to do that, you know. So I'm not the guy. And we used to hear, this is what, step 12, we used to hear in here when I was new, they would say, this is a way of life. The spiritual life's not a theory. We have to live it. And this, the steps are a way of life. I'm going, how did they incorporate that? I couldn't figure out how you could incorporate each individual step into a way of life. And I told you before, I thought they're theoretically, you know, this is great literature, but they don't really mean that our very lives as problem drinkers depend on our constant thought of others and how we may help me. No, really. Come on, tell me the real truth. Because that'll never happen. That'll never happen. Good news. I don't have to feel like it happens. It does happen. When you run and through the pain of finding out in sobriety, here's the great news for you. These steps are divinely, I believe, designed to bring you to a point where you become less and God becomes more. Where you stop being God. And you can at last open up and have a willingness to see what's really there. And you'll look at things differently. Today I look at a tree. I sit and do my morning meditation. I look at a tree and I go, wow, there. And not every morning, but some mornings. There's perfect love. That tree did not wake up and say, what direction should I grow in today? And I wonder if I'm going to get enough sunlight or water today. It's being provided for. It's totally connected to everything else. It breathes in, it takes in carbon dioxide, which we give off, and it gives off oxygen, which we need. It doesn't say, today, I'm not going to let, there's only certain types of birds I'm going to let come and nest in me. And I'm only going to give shade to the nice people today. It's absolutely anonymous in its love. Now, I didn't like that theory because of that. I didn't want God to be neutral or non-interfering. See, I needed a God. My ego needed to be special. And I needed God. I needed to know that. You see, and during the process of the steps and going through the steps, I learned a lot about myself. We digested big chunks about ourselves and the way I treated people and my relationships to people. And there were two types of people in this world, as far as I was concerned. The ones whose backs I was stepping on to get to the butts of the ones I was kissing. The invisible ones. Did you get, please, you're in my way, you know. And I was looking, even in AA, you know, I'm looking for a sponsor that's an attorney or something, because I got legal problems. Or a banker, you know. Somebody that can help me. Not a mailman. Living in a retirement community in a trailer park. It's not who I need. If you want what we have, absolutely not. But there were people in here, by the way, when I talked about Frank yesterday that came up afterwards, they knew Frank. Frank was one of those guys. I go, you know my Frank? And they go, yeah, we know Frank. They used to live in that area. And they said, yeah, Frank, you know, when you're talking to yourself, you're talking to an idiot, Frank. You know, that was what Frank's favorite line was. And the other favorite thing that Frank was, and Frank was a guy for me. He was the perfect guy for me. He never would give advice. I couldn't get him to be on my side no matter what problem I went with. No matter what she did to me, no matter what they did to me, I could not get him to be on my side. Yeah, they really are dirtbags, man. You know, he was just, his favorite line was, here's what I want you to do. And I would think, okay, I want you to pray about it and let me know how God works it out. Okay, Frank, that works for you. You live in a trailer park. You've got no life. Sex isn't even important. Probably not even happening in your life anymore. You know, that's what sponsees think, these young guys think. Well, you know, he's not even having it anymore. Well, I'm not going to listen to his advice. So, when my life burned to the ground at 6 years sober, and it talks about it in the 12 and 12. And I love what Kent talked about in the working with others. And in the 12th step, the 12th step is such a great step. And here's my picture of the steps when we get to step 12. You know, I came here, I was drowning. I was literally drowning, and I wanted you to save my life. And you said, yeah, stick with us, we will. We'll help. You're in the right place. And I thought you were going to save my life. And then you lied to me. That's not what we do here. What we do is we teach you to be a lifeguard. We don't teach you to swim. We teach you to be a lifeguard. You can't get this unless you give it away. You can't keep it unless you give it away. And in step 12, you know, I love it in Bill's story when he met Dr. Bob and they discovered this spark in Akron, 1935. You know what the first thing they did? They called the hospital, they spoke to the head nurse, and they described their need. Not their want, their need. We need a drunk right away. That's what we need. When Bill met Bob, what are you going to do to help me? Bill said to Bob, I'm not here to help you. I'm here to help me. And we don't realize that this is, it's kind of like sex. You don't know who's really giving or who's getting. When it's done right. If Sheldon can do the foreskin, I can talk. So how do I make this thing into a way of life? How do I do these things? And you know, when I sponsor guys, I do the same thing. I only have one condition. I'm not a hard-ass sponsor. That's not my deal. I'm a guy, you know, I was given love. Frank took me under his arm. He took me to places. He introduced me to places. The greatest thing that Frank ever said to me was, stick with me. You're going to be all right. And I went, whoa. Because in my mind, it's never going to be all right. He'd throw me those little lifelines, and I would go to him, and he would say crazy things. You know, I'd go to him and say, Frank, you don't understand. I haven't paid income tax in 20 years. I owe child support. I'm living with mom in a trailer park next door to you, and you're my only friend. And he would say, oh, no, don't worry about it. It's July. July is a bad month for alcoholics, man. August is a great month for alcoholics. He would say that. And I go, really? All right. Okay. Because seriously, you know how it is. When you're depressed, it seems like your whole life has been depressed. My childhood sucked. The future's bleak. Right? And when you're happy, it's like you just burned a fat one. You're listening to the music, the top down in the car, and you're, hey, everything's been great. My childhood was great. You know, my future looks bright. You think it's never going to end, both the good times and the bad times. We think it's never going to end. And because we're trying to capture. I have an ego, and this is what I think my ego looks like to me. My ego's interested in three things. Maybe more, I haven't discovered them yet, but the three things my ego's interested in is self-preservation, self-gratification, and control. It's the only thing I can figure that it's... And it serves a purpose. We can't live here without that. We plan our day-to-day functions. We have these instincts that is my ego. For self-preservation, for society, for a place in society, for procreation or romance or mating or whatever you want to call it. And we have these natural instincts. Bill talks about it. They far exceed their normal purpose in our lives, and they drive us. In other words, my instincts have been dragging my butt around for 40 years, 45 years by the time I realized it. And I had been reacting to them. And then I finally started, through the pain of this program, when I tried to build a life sober, I gave Alcoholics Anonymous the alcohol and the drugs. I'll give you that, God, but I'm going to manage the other life and the other things. And when I found out I didn't, I was convinced, being convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. I said, what do I do? How do I do this? And luckily, I went back to the men, and then the book, they read me this book. You know, when you read this book yourself, when I read it myself, it's talking about you. But when they read it to me, it was talking about me. I don't know, something happened when I sat there and read it with another man. And maybe I was just open, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And what happened is I was willing to go back. I was willing to do anything other than make a decision in my life again, because I had proved my decisions were bad. All my decisions were bad. And I could see they were all selfish at heart. Some work out. The worst thing that could happen is I make a decision and there are no consequences. I think I got away with something based on self. So how do I incorporate? I have run my life to the ground. I was like the Jimmy Buffett song. I had to go fishing down to rock bottom. What do I have left? And those men that scooped me up at that meeting on my sixth anniversary, and they took me and they said, like the old joke, we're going to show you how to do this one more time. Okay. And they got me involved. They got me involved in taking meetings into jails and detoxes. And they got me through the steps again. And I saw these causes and conditions. I saw who I really was. That there's something in me that is defective, that doesn't measure you the same way I measure me. And that will always be there. It's not as loud today, and I don't need to follow it. It doesn't drive me the way it used to. But I still, at times, think I'm the coolest guy in the room. It happens. And because I really was looking to graduate from Alcoholics Anonymous. I wasn't looking to really set up housekeeping here. You people are really nice, but, you know, I want to get back to South Beach, you know. So what happened is when I finally drove my life to the ground in every area, here's what I had left. I had Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had my son. Okay. And they told me, well, why don't you try and be successful where you're at today with what you have? Just be successful in today. Can you be a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous? Yes, I've been beaten into submission. I can be. I'm willing. And I can be a good dad. It's all I had left. He was the only person left in my life. So I started to take some direction, and I started to build a life based on these principles. And these principles are like, they don't become really important until you start practicing them. That's why it says, practice these principles in all our affairs. Let me read something to you that I love, and it's in the 12 and 12. And it says, now comes the biggest question of all. What about the practice of these principles in all our affairs? Can we love the whole pattern of living as eagerly as we do the small segment we discover when we try to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety? Or the 1 hour in a meeting? I always felt better after a meeting, didn't you? It was the other 23 hours a day that tripped me up. Can we bring the same spirit of love and tolerance into our sometimes deranged family lives that we bring to our AA group? Can we have the same kind of confidence and faith in those people who have been infected and sometimes crippled by our own illness that we have in our sponsors? In other words, can they be as important? Can they be as important? Because they're not as important. And we hear it, and we say it a lot in here, the party line, well, this is a selfish disease. You know, we have to be selfish in Alcoholics Anonymous. No, you don't. It's selfless. You know? A much more important demonstration. We feel a man who is unthinking that says sobriety is enough. A much more important demonstration of these principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. That's where it shows up. Having a tulip without the flower isn't a tulip. It's a weed. Can we actually carry the AA spirit into our daily work? Ooh, I hated that word, work. I want the money. I want payday. I just don't want the work. Can we meet our newly recognized responsibilities in the world at large? And can we bring new purpose and devotion to the religion of our choice? Can we find a new joy in trying to do something about all these things? The Bill says in the 12 and 12, which I love the 12 and 12 when it comes to step 12 and some other steps, some of the best writing he ever made. He says the joy of living is the theme of the 12th step. On page 164 in our text, it says, when these men have discovered the joy of helping others, there will be no stopping them. There's gold, but you got to have the ore before you can refine it into gold. You got to try it enough to do it. Furthermore, shall we come to terms with seeming failure or success? Can we now accept and adjust to either without despair or pride? This is really heavy stuff here. Can we accept poverty and sickness, loneliness and bereavement with courage and serenity? Can we steadfastly content ourselves with the humbler, yet sometimes more durable satisfactions when the brighter and glittering achievements are denied us? And he says the answer is yes. So how do I get to where I can do those things? Because I can't. I can read it and say that theoretically that sounds good. Well, how do I get from the spiritual life being a theory to really living it? Experience. Show up. It's going to happen to you. You are going to be divinely provided for. Now, you're not going to like what I call, these are what I call Bill W. moments in your life. The Bill W. moments are these. Remember when Bill was pacing that lobby in Akron? He couldn't pay his bill. I've been there. I've been sneaking out of motel rooms many times. Pacing that lobby, can't pay the bill. His pipe dream, his coming attractions, just went up in smoke. I would have been set on my feet. Do you imagine what would have happened to us if he got the job? If it worked out? We're here because it didn't work out. We have been running from the thing we should run to, where the very gold is, where the lesson is, where the life experience is. Because I'm so conditioned, Kent talked about it, I'm so conditioned and been so brainwashed that these are certain things I must achieve. This is what success looks like. And he has that moment. Go to the bar. He hears the bar. I know there's relief. I'm a relief-seeking missile. I know there's relief in that bar, man. Couple drinks and I'll be good. And he only had $5 or something in his pocket, right? And it wouldn't matter. It wouldn't matter. If he had a couple drinks in him, he'd be the life of the party. What am I? Fear of people and economic insecurity shall leave us with a couple drinks. Right? Those promises come true. And on the other end, there's no A. Remember, there's no AA. There's no set guideline what to do. Call your sponsor. He had to go and he had to seek another alcoholic. I got to find me another alcoholic. And he had to go to the phone booth and start calling people. And it sounds crazy. I need a drunk. But this thing is crazy. It's based on a crazy premise. That's why, you know, we ought to have a sign over our doors. Only knuckleheads need enter. Because you can't get here when you're doing everything right. Right? I mean, think about what we're here for. I picture I'm treading water in the middle of the ocean. No land around. Right? No land in sight. I'm smart enough to know I'm screwed. Now, I can tread water for a while. But sooner or later, I'm going down. And that's when the bottom happens. When you know you're going down. And you can try, and now I need, there's going to have to be a power greater than me that's going to have to help me if I'm going to get out of this. So now I'm willing to hope for this power. You know, all right, if without it, I'm dead. So I'm going to think the Coast Guard's going to come, Joe's going to come in a helicopter and save me, or some ship is going to come, or something is going to happen that's going to save my life. But it's got to come from a power outside myself. The power doesn't come and I get more desperate. And I get more desperate. And then here comes Frank in the middle of the ocean. This old postman doing the side stroke. Hey kid, follow me. What? Are you out of your mind? You don't understand my problems here. I've got some serious problems. I'm going to follow you. Where? Follow you where? Just follow. If I wasn't absolutely desperate, I would have never followed Frank. We would have never followed Bill. Think about it. Bill's in the hospital on some sort of medication, the Belladonna treatment or something, which is a hallucinogen. And I got a great idea. Let's follow me. We followed him. It's not linear. This thing is spiritual. And letting go, here's this. Bill calls us worldly about 6 or 7 times in the book. I looked up the definition of worldly. Do you know what it is? And he says, we are worldly people. We are worldly indeed. The definition of worldly is more concerned with material things than spiritual things. We have to be broken before we can open ourselves to this, because it's against our nature. We're material beings. Our instincts run far exceed. We can't accept. We can't digest. We have an allergy to spiritual things. You know, they're wonderful, but they're not the decision makers in my life. So what happens is when we finally succumb and we become willing, I end up following Frank. I wouldn't have followed Frank. And we finally get to the shore and we come up on shore. And then here's what Frank says to me. I go, whew, thank God we made it. I'm safe. I've gone through the steps. I'm safe. I've made it. No, now you got to go back out there and help those other people that are out there treading water. What? Well, now that you know the way back, that's what you do. Go help those other people. And we're not a pyramid scheme. We're not here trying to sign up people. We don't get credit in AA heaven for how many people we sign up. It's about today. It's about living peacefully today and able to match calamity with serenity. Butch's story last night about his granddaughter. I've seen those men are heroes. I sat around in that room of old retired people there, and I would hear stories about how they lost their sons and daughters to alcoholism, or their grandkids, like Butch's story. And I go, where do they find? I'm a dad. Where do they find the courage to do that? Where could you find the courage to do that? And then I realized something happened to me at one time. My son was in the Coast Guard, and we were there at his graduation from boot camp, and I saw a picture of him in his uniform, and you know, when he came out, he was really, it looked like a man. He went in a kid. He was living in his car. And when I said, you need a power greater than yourself. I'm going to give you 5. Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, Coast Guard. Pick one. You need a power greater than yourself that's willing to run your life. But when he graduated, you know, it was just an impressive picture. They had taken him through boot camp, and you become a man. And you know, a lot, we're like that in here. I mean, we come in because we got nothing going in our life. I need discipline. I told you, I need discipline. I need something in my, join the service. That's why they call it service, because it's a service. And they take you in short, fat, dumb, undisciplined, and they turn a self-centered puke. And you go through that boot camp, and at the end of that 8 to 12 weeks, you come out a we, part of a unit. And here's the great part. Steps 1 and step 2 are the part where you just go down and recruit. And step 3 is where they swear you in, put your hand on this Bible, this is it. Now, you haven't even gotten a gun or a uniform yet, but you're in. That's what step 3 is. You're in. You're sworn in. 4 through 9 are the work. That's the boot camp. And you come out the other side, and then 10 and 11, you get your uniform, you get your deployment, and here's your, step 12 is your deployment. That's all it is. Step 12 is a deployment. Help other alcoholics practice these principles in all your affairs. Now that you're fit, you're a different person than you were when you first got here. You'll find the courage. We find it together. We are stronger together than we are alone. I ended up with my son. Went back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I joined a group, and it was just a group that I was led to. because of convenience. And this group was one of these groups that was so active. They chaired meetings. They took meetings into detoxes and treatment centers. And they were always had full of commitments. And they were a kind of group, they would say, okay, we need some people to lead a meeting down in Fort Myers this next month. And the meeting would stop until they had the volunteers. They would not move forward. And things like that. We need coffee makers. We need greeters. And the meeting would stop until they had people signed up. And kind of forced me into action and doing these corny things that that we all do in here. And I finally decided, I got with my sponsor and I said, listen, when I got broken after 6 years, a great thing happened to me. It wasn't great at the time. I was angry and bitter and I almost drank. But what happened to me is I got off the treadmill. I stopped living in the coming attractions and the instant replay. And it was just him and I. And if this is all there is, can I be happy? And I was 46 years old and I was broke. And I had all my dreams of being somebody. You know, Bill says the drive for success was on. I proved to the world I was important. Who's the world? I stopped playing to that audience. I started playing to this audience. See to it that your relationship is right and great events will come to pass. I only have to fix one thing. Just one thing. This. And it's the trickle-down theory. All the rest seems to work out. For a dummy like me, it works out. I made that boy promises when I held him in my hands when he was born. I'm going to coach you in Little League and baseball, basketball. We're going to love each other. We're going to be best friends. And I didn't. I didn't. I loved that boy. And I couldn't do it. And at 6 years sober, I said, I'm going to be a dad. What's that look like? I couldn't go back to the business I was in. It was a 14-hour-a-day business. It was in the car business, and I was a single dad. So my sponsor says, get a crummy job. Okay. Get a job where you can take them to school in the morning and pick them up from school at night, and you can be with them. And I did that. I took a crummy job. And I started to coach him in Little League, in baseball, basketball, football. We had a little rented place that we had that had his bedroom set, my bedroom set, and a kitchen table and chairs because we had dinner every night. I only made one thing, stir fry. It's either chicken or beef. But he didn't know any better, you know. And we had no furniture in the living room. It was a football field. Just a big TV, and that's where we could play football. And we had a ball. And I started to become active in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you started to infect my life. These things come to us. It's divinely designed when you start to do this thing and stop trying to do it to be somewhere else. Remember I told you, I would get real spiritual and check my wallet. Because there was never for free. Never. I stopped trying to take a job to get another job. And guess what happened at that crummy job? I fell in love with it. I fell in love with going to work every day and being of service to people. After about a year and a half, my wife and I ran into each other and we met, I don't know whether it was at a conference or somewhere, and we started dating again. We knew we could not do this without God's help. Every area of my life had to have God. My work life, my family life, my romance life. So when we started to date, we ended up getting remarried. And today, we start every day with prayer. We bring God into our marriage every day. Even the days we don't want to, when it sounds like this, do you want to pray? And there are some days like that. Not because of her, mostly because of me. All my friends here, when they got, a lot of them hadn't met my wife, and now that she's here with me, they're going, oh my God, you're a saint. How have you been putting up with her? And she really is a saint. She's the ultimate mother. She's the ultimate. And we have an incredible, and God saw fit to give the worst parent, you heard my story, to give the worst parent in the world another opportunity. We had twin boys. And I was 48 years old. Those boys grew up loved. They know they're loved. And they love us. I mean, the one son, when my, I mean, there isn't a day that goes by we don't tell each other we love each other. And one of our kids, the one that you guys might meet one day, if you see him looking in a dictionary, he's looking up bad words. When my wife says, "I love you, Mikey," she'll say, "I love you more." He'll say, "I love you more." I mean, our kids love us. They love being with us. It's a whole different world that has happened to us because of this thing. I didn't try to be this guy. I'm not qualified to be a good parent. I suck as my track record. Show me your resumes. What do we do to, you're lucky you don't get what you deserve. If I had to show my resume, but that's really what we do with our drunkalog. We show our resume. This is why I belong here. Not because of our virtues, because of our handicaps. It's not always successful, but it's always something worthwhile. And I believe that you will be allowed, you will be given these Bill W. moments in your life to grow or to turn back. There's, Kent said it yesterday. There is no standing still. There's only two alternatives. When you finally accept this thing, there's only two alternatives. Spiritual principles, die an alcoholic death. Choice is ours. I can sit and pretend they don't exist, but that's all that does exist for me today. Because I'm all in, hook, line, and sinker. Our whole world, my wife's celebrated 19 years. Our home is an AA home. We have a dog named Gracie. It's short for Amazing Grace. We have a boat named Higher Powered. Our sponsees, our house is full of sponsees, women and men sponsees. There's no separation of church and state anymore. I don't have a separate compartment for my life. I've tried the best I could to manage my life. Now, that's not to say that when things don't get tough, I try and manage. And when I hear stories like Butch did last night, you know, I remember, and sometimes illness happens, and I've seen illness. Nothing will knock you off your spirituality like severe illness. And I remember one time I had, at 2008, I had an aortic aneurysm and a bubble that was going to pop in my aorta. And I had to have surgery, and I was really sick for a long time, and I wasn't getting better. And I wanted to die. I went into this deep depression and really wanted to die. And after about 6 weeks, you know, and I'd seen men go through illness or bereavement in with grace and dignity and pride. And I said, you know, maybe I can use them as an example and I can go through this like they did. I'm here to tell you I'm going to have to wait for my next serious illness to do it with dignity and pride. And but I'm here. I made it through. It's not a matter of style. It's results. I'm still here and I get to try it again with you guys. So anyway, we have had a great time being with you guys today. I know we didn't give you any new information, but just a quick thing I want to tell you about a story. Yeah, the two big lies in AA. I'll be brief and in closing. this is a story that kind of personifies my experience with Alcoholics Anonymous. There was, and I heard this story, I can't remember where. There was a woman, she was a sage, and she lived up in the mountains in Himalayas, and she used to bake her bread every day and go and sit and meditate by the stream that would come down from the mountains. And she was a wise sage, kind of a guru. And one day a pilgrim came out of the mountains, and it would wash, the rivers would get full and would wash down some rocks. And while she was sitting there, she looked in the water and she noticed this precious gem that it must have washed down the river. And she picked it up and she knew what it was. And it was a precious stone, worth a lot. And she put it in the basket with her bread. And she continued to do her meditation, did what she did every day. And this pilgrim comes walking out hungry and tired and beat up from his pilgrimage, walking out of the woods, and comes down the stream, and he sees her and he smells the bread and he says, I'm starving. Do you have any food? She opens her basket and gives him some bread. And when she does that, he sees the stone. He said, you know, could I have that stone? And she just picks it up and gives it to him. He says, thank you. And he walks away. So the next day she does what she does every day, bakes her bread, goes down there and meditates, and she's sitting by the stream and just enjoying the nature, and this man comes back to her that day. And he says, I'm going to give you back this stone. And she says, why? He said, because I discovered what I really want. What I really want is not that stone. I want what's inside of you that allowed you to give me that stone. The kindness of strangers that I found in this place. A loving God that I have found in here. I thank you for my life today. Thank you.